Come, senators, congressmen, please heed the call. Don't stand in the doorway, don't lock up the hall. For he that gets hurt will be he who has stalled. The battle outside raging will soon shake your windows and rattle your walls. For the times, they are a-changing.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Alan Lichtman, who's a distinguished professor of history at American University, who has studied both the American right and the presidency. His books include White Protestant Nation, The Rise of the American Conservative Movement, and The Keys to the White House, A Surefire Way of Predicting the Next President. His prediction system has correctly predicted the outcomes of all U.S. presidential elections since 1984. His latest book is FDR and the Jews. Welcome to Background Briefing, Alan Lichtman.
Thank you, Ian.
And it seems that the autopsy that was done by the RNC that Reince Priebus had announced recently has been met with a lot of derision and scorn from the Republican right. And it sort of leads one to see this growing divide in that party. And as the Supreme Court takes up the gay marriage issue tomorrow, even more of a division you see in the party, particularly given that Priebus wants to reach out to the young and the minorities, and the young are sort of post-sexual in, as far as gay marriage is concerned. So, I mean, are they on a trajectory towards irrelevance?
Well, as you know, Ian, in my book, which was finished in 2007, published in 2008, my epilogue was called The Conservative Implosion. As early as 6 years ago, I was able to foresee that contradictions within the conservative ideological base, not anything liberals were doing, but internal contradictions, were going to cause enormous problems for the right and the Republican Party. I didn't predict they'd be headed to irrelevancy, although I thought that was certainly a possibility. But as you know, one of the reasons they're not irrelevant is the power of the Republicans at the state level, which has resulted in these tremendously gerrymandered districts. You have a state like Pennsylvania. That's an overwhelmingly Democratic state. It's a 5 to 10 point Democratic state, and yet Republicans have a substantial majority of the congressional seats. So for the foreseeable future, they may well have a base in the U.S. House and in the state governments as a result of reapportionment. They've also done reasonably well at the gubernatorial level. But at the national level, they absolutely are heading to irrelevancy. They have become a party bereft of any ideas, any solutions, internally divided, and the most they seem able to do is obstruct.
Well, of course, they also are a party, in terms of contradicting my notion of irrelevance, they're a party with unlimited funds from a lot of bilious billionaires who they, the Republicans in the House in particular, and the Senate, will go to the mat for.
That's absolutely right. You know, everyone talks about this wonderful grassroots Tea Party movement. I admire grassroots movements, whether from the left or the right, but, you know, as Deep Throat once said, follow the money. And you can see where the money is going into the Tea Party from the Koch brothers and other major corporate interests, because they know that the philosophy of the Tea Party is to let these people basically do what they please without any kind of supervision and regulation. And that's why so much money is going from major corporate donors to the Republican right. And that, of course, as you point out, helps them from becoming irrelevant as well. But they have huge contradictions that they have to deal with. And that Republican postmortem document didn't begin to deal with. I have three words for that document: empty, empty, empty. It talked about image, talked about messaging, it talked about fundraising, didn't even begin to touch upon the substantive policy contradictions that are at the heart of Republican troubles.
And it didn't really deal with this dichotomy that was so apparent at CPAC, where you have this sort of Jurassic Republicans that Reince Priebus referred to as stuffy old men. And then you've got these young up-and-comers, in particular Rand Paul, who who won the straw poll, as his father had done before. So it seems to me that it's possible that one of two things is possible. Either Rand Paul will be the next nominee and the party will move into the Libertarian direction, or it'll split up. I mean, either way.
Yeah, I think a split is much more likely. I'd be shocked to see Rand Paul nominated, because the Republican Party is at its core not libertarian. It's libertarian in certain regards. That is, it's libertarian in that it does not believe in economic regulation. But it is hardly libertarian when it comes to social regulation. The Republican Party is the party of anti-gay legislation, anti-abortion legislation, cracking down on pornography, support for police, support for the military. You know, it's not remotely libertarian in any of those regards, which is why Ron Paul, while he had kind of a fervent following, had a very small following, was never really able to dent the majority of the Republican Party. Every single major Republican candidate in 2012 was anti-choice.
Again, I'm speaking with Alan Lichtman, who's a distinguished professor of history at American University, who has studied both the American right and the presidency. His books include White Protestant Nation, The Rise of the American Conservative Movement, and The Keys to the White House, A Surefire Way to Predicting the Next President. His prediction system has correctly predicted the outcomes of all U.S. presidential elections since 1984. His latest book is FDR and the Jews. Now, I wouldn't, though, Alan, I wouldn't dismiss Rand Paul altogether, because I've never seen a politician rise so quickly out of nowhere.
Barack Obama.
Well, that's true.
He's even more quickly out of more nowhere.
Right, and he obviously has much greater and broader appeal, even though he's an African-American. But right. Rand Paul, you have to admit, his filibuster was a stroke of genius.
It was a stroke of genius. Great political theater, and it really got him some attention. But I just can't see the idea of libertarianism going anywhere within the Republican Party. It never had, and the social conservatives, the national security conservatives, are so bitterly opposed, unless you get some kind of phony libertarianism, and that is that it's libertarian only with respect to economic regulation, but not with respect to the military, the police, and social regulation. That's phony libertarianism, and I certainly can see phony libertarianism going somewhere within the Republican Party.
So I guess, to make a somewhat comical analogy to what we're talking about, Alan Lichtman, it's just been recently revealed that during the Republican primaries that Rick Santorum and Newt Gingrich apparently met secretly to form a joint ticket to block Mitt Romney, and they couldn't agree on who would be president and
who would be
vice president. And there you have the split between the social conservative and the more pragmatic. He's not a libertarian, but at least he's...
No, Newt Gingrich is no libertarian.
Right. But I'm saying that there you have it, you know, that the social conservatives by nature just can't compromise, right?
No. How can you? They believe, you know, that their position is divinely ordained and sanctioned. So there really isn't any giving up on that position, and that's at least a solid third of the Republican base that they cannot afford to alienate. You know, used to have a lot of pro-choice Republicans. You certainly don't anymore. As I said, the price of even running for president these days, if you're a Republican, has become you've got to be anti-choice.
So, you know, we're talking about the future of this party that seems to be heading for a crack-up of some kind over both, you know, it could happen in the short term, but it will certainly happen in the long term. But what happens to America in the interim? Because, you know, what we have now is just unacceptable. I can't believe the American people aren't more outraged at the obstructionism of the Republicans.
And it's hard to believe, but, you know... A dying warrior keeps flailing out, right? And the Republicans are going to keep flailing. They're not going to solve their contradictions. They've shown not the faintest sign that they are going to do that. There's not a word in that extensive document that points in that direction. So, you know, like a dying beast, they're still going to be flailing out blindly and being obstructionist. There's no other path right now for the party. They have nothing else to offer, and the polls show that. You know, the Republican brand is, you know, getting close to where it was under Richard Nixon.
Well, but meanwhile, the country that's faced with some serious choices is going nowhere, and I'm surprised at how the Democrats have not seized on what we're talking about. They haven't seized on some of the absurd contradictions in the basic positions that the Republicans have taken.
It's pathetic. The Democrats, you know, are so weak. You know, the American people hates Congress overall. Congress has lower public standing than Attila the Hun. You know, it's 90% said they don't like the Congress. You can't get 90% of Americans to agree on the spelling of their name. Those polls are amazing. And yet, we keep electing exactly the same kind of weak-kneed, unimaginative, place-holding professional polls to office. Look at Maryland. You know, we are one of the two or three bluest states in the country. Can you even tell me who we elected the last time to the United States Senate? Probably not, because no one knows. Ben Cardin, complete nonentity, in the safest seat in the country. We should have a leader, someone inspiring the people, someone taking on the Republicans. Instead, we have an overstuffed, you know, professional poll sitting and holding a place to no end. It's ridiculous.
But does that lead us to campaign finance, the fact that the plutocrats have captured our democracy and they own the Republican Party outright and they rent the Democratic Party?
Well, that's a huge part of it. You and I have talked about this many, many times. The problem is twofold. Number one, how are you going to get the very people that benefit from this outlandish system to get rid of it? And number two, how are you going to get reforms passed this conservative Supreme Court? You know, one of the untold stories about Republican obstructionism that people don't realize is the way they're obstructing Barack Obama's judicial appointments, not even letting them come up for a vote. One judicial appointee to the D.C. Court of Appeals just withdrew because the Republicans wouldn't even let her have a vote up or down. There are four vacancies in the second most important court in the land, and the Republicans won't even allow votes on nominees.
Well, but that's because they control that court. And even the seat vacated by Chief Justice Roberts is still open. I mean, that's how bad it is. And that court just passed a extraordinary ruling where they overturned Obama's only way around the Republican obstruction with the filibuster in the Senate, and that is recess appointments. Now they've invalidated his recess appointments. So how come...
We're paralyzed, you know. And, you know, you can say the Republicans are obstructionists, but you've got to put a lot of blame on the weak-kneed Democrats. Ian, look at the United States Senate. Can you tell me one figure in the United States Senate who is truly inspirational? I can't think of a one since the death of Ted Kennedy. Where are the Daniel Websters, the Paul Douglases, the Ted Kennedys? They're gone. There's placeholders there.
Well, you've also
exactly
got
exactly what we don't need.
Right, and you've also got a majority leader in Harry Reid who got snookered by Mitch McConnell. I mean,
over the
filibuster reform. So this is the part of it that I don't understand. And somebody recently said to me on the air here that the difference between the Democrats and the Republicans is in as much as conservatives in this country are proud to be conservatives. They call themselves conservative. Remember, Mitt Romney said he's a severe conservative, whereas no liberal in this country is prepared to call themselves a liberal. I mean, isn't that the disparity?
That was the Michael Dukakis, you know, the card-carrying liberal member of the ACLU. And, of course, all of the mindless punditry attributed those negative attacks to his defeat. Those things had nothing to do with his defeat. And yet, since then, the word liberal has been radioactive. One of the things that I think is most pernicious in this country is after-the-fact punditry. These pundits who have no idea how elections really work, after the fact, will give you all of these reasons why candidates won or lost based on absolutely nothing. So Mitt Romney ran a really bad campaign. Well, 2% of the vote had shifted, and Mitt Romney had won the election, those same pundits would be saying Mitt Romney's brilliant campaign. And, you know, so we get all of this worthless stuff, you know, coming out, particularly after elections, that somehow politicians want to take seriously.
Well, what do you think then would ever revitalize the Democratic Party and bring about the very thing that you're asking for there, Alan Lichtman, and that is real leaders and politicians, particularly in the United States Senate?
Right.
What would happen, I mean, short of taking the money out, which is the core problem?
Leave that aside. That, of course, is important. You know, change has occurred in this country typically under two circumstances. One, a terrible crisis, the Great Depression, the Civil War. Or two, a major grassroots movement. I think the only thing that's going to change and move the Democratic Party is a revival of a grassroots movement. Would we have had the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Voting Rights Act of 1965 without the Civil Rights Movement? Would politicians have done all of that on their own? Not hardly. That is, I think, what it's going to take.
Well, Alan Lichtman, from your lips to God's ears, I don't see the activism. The Tea Party still active. They still control the Congress. The Occupy movement fizzled. So we can hold our breaths and hope that something revives political activism.
Thank you, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Alan Lichtman, who's a distinguished professor of history at American University, who has studied both the American right and the presidency. His books include White Protestant Nation, The Rise of the American Conservative Movement, and The Keys to the White House, A Surefire Way to Predicting the Next President. His prediction system has correctly predicted the outcomes of all U.S. presidential elections since 1984, and his latest book is FDR and the Jews. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about when the agony in Syria will end.
Bruce Rodner!
Sit down, man.
Glenn Beck!
Sit down, man.
Rand Paul!
Sit down, man.
LL Cool J!
Sit down, man.
Netanyahu!
Sit down, man.
Sarah Palin!
Sit down, man.
Newt Gingrich!
Sit down, man.
Toby Keith!
Sit down, man.